You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There's been a sharp rise in New York City's poverty rate, and that's been having dramatic effects. In January, the city's homeless population exceeded 50,000, the highest number since the Great Depression. Kim Velsey, a senior editor at the New York Observer, put names to the statistics of growing numbers of affected families when she interviewed Ann Pierre, who's living in a Brownsville shelter on Amboy Street with her two sons. Kim Velsey's article, The Return of Hooverville, appeared in the April 29th issue of The Observer, and she joins me now along with Ann Pierre. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
What circumstances did the two of you meet?
At the Bronx Intake Shelter.
In the Bronx?
In the Bronx, right, which is the place where all homeless families have to apply for shelters.
Even if you live in Brooklyn or Queens or Staten Island?
Yes, it's called PAD.
Now, Ann, didn't you wonder why Kim wanted to know more about you? Were you suspicious?
No, but what happened was they sent me a letter. They told me I was denied and I had to go for a conference. So I went there and I was too late. And they told me, like, you can't stay overnight. You have to go back to the shelter and come early in the morning. I was like, why can't we stay? Like, you know, I have all our things. They say, no, that's like, you know, they already paid for the night. You guys have to go back.
Go back to what?
You have to go back to, at the time, it was on Blake, 515 Blake.
Yeah, so
it called Help One.
Anne had an issue where she was declared ineligible for long-term shelter for a while, and so she had to keep on reapplying for shelter. So I met her on the evening when she was in the process of reapplying for trying to get back her long-term eligibility.
And why would you be, why would that be declined?
I supposed to bring them a paper. My friend that's supposed to give me the paper was it in New York at the time. And they told me, like, you know, that's how it is. Like, I have to keep applying until I bring the letter.
Rules are rules. Yes. It doesn't matter whether you don't have a place to stay.
Yes.
Right.
Even, like, you know, if it's for 10 days, like, you know, I have to keep doing it every 10 days until that.
So do you feel like they're making it particularly hard for people in a situation like yours?
I could say yes.
Kim, I'm sure you spoke with a lot of people in shelters in the process of working on this piece. What made you connect with Ann in particular?
I feel like Ann's story is, first of all, Ann's just a very warm, open person, and she's wonderful to speak with. She's very articulate, you know, in talking about the situation that her and her family ended up in. I think Anne in particular is sort of common in this sort of case of, you know, the rising homelessness in the city, because she was until recently, employed full time, and she had a place to live with a Section 8 voucher, and through a number of factors fell out of both of those things. It's like, you know, people are sort of living very close to the line, and then something goes wrong, and everything goes wrong.
How did you lose your apartment?
The landlord wanted the apartment back. She didn't want us to stay there anymore. We had to go to court for almost like a year. After that, like, you know, the judge said, like, you know, it's been a year. You still ain't find, like, you know, your apartment. And I did bring my paperwork to Section 8. They gave me like 4 months to find an apartment. At the time, I was working full-time, like, for 8 to 8.
So it was hard to take time off to look for an apartment. But that apartment was a problem in other ways, wasn't it? The one you were in, it had a lot of mold?
Yes.
So the landlord didn't want to fix that?
They did fix it, but the mold was still coming back. And I have my older son, Jordan. He's asthmatic.
So, obviously, this was not a place you wanted to stay in. At the same time, you had no option because you had nowhere else to go?
No, and there was, like, you know, there was no heat. I had to, you know, buy my own heater, like, so we could put it in the rooms. We have to boil water to make sure, like, you know, the apartment stay hot. you know, for me and the kids.
How much were you being charged for this apartment?
It was a Section 8 apartment. My portion was like $350. Mm-hmm.
And the total rent was something like 12 or 11, right?
$1,100 for an apartment that doesn't have heat or hot water.
12 something.
Yeah. And, well, your situation was sort of, the apartment actually became disqualified from Section 8, right? If certain sort of standards aren't met, Section 8 will no longer allow you to continue living in that apartment, and then you'd have to find another, which was part of your problem, where you couldn't actually stay, even though you wanted to.
Yes.
Now, how long have you been in the shelter system?
Since we went in June, and when I went in June, I had like a month before my Section 8 voucher expired. Mm-hmm. And I went there, and with no lie, I didn't really get, much help. But when I finally, I had to move. I had the court order to move the same day my Section 8 voucher was expired.
Go ahead. Finish.
You know, and I went on Monday. They told me, to go on Monday. And I explained to the supervisor that, and the supervisor told me, you know what, I'm going to give you a week to find a place. If you find a place, then, it's okay. And I did find a place in a week. But after that, my case was not open with PA. To have, since I was not working at the time, I supposed to have, my PA case open.
And you'd lost your job?
I had to take a leave of absence because I didn't have nobody to watch my kids for me. And my case was not open, so I didn't have no money in my hand to pay, for a babysitter.
Now, Kim, it sounds to me like there are lots of rules here. In speaking to the various people who you met, did you find that most of them didn't understand the rules?
Yeah, well, I think there are a lot of, there's a lot of sort of different systems that people are working through, and that's confusing for a lot of people, I think. And there are also lots of rules at each of the individual shelters. Anne's has sort of, security searches and things like that when she goes in. And sort of over time, or you have to sign in every night. If you miss more than one night or two nights of sign-ins, you get sort of placed on, a watch or in a danger of having to reapply for shelter. And when people are staying in shelters for long periods of time, for months and years, I think this becomes, sort of very difficult for people to live under.
In the article, Anne, you arrive at the shelter on Amboy Street after midnight. Do you normally arrive that late?
No. We were there a little bit,
That was the night that you had your first night there when you had applied. And you were late at the Bronx Intake Center.
Oh, so after that, you wound up going to this place.
Yes.
With your two kids.
Yes.
How old are your children?
9 and 4.
You have a daughter as well who's a teenager?
Yes.
And she's not part of this process?
No. No, she's not.
She just didn't want to go and live in a shelter?
She told me, she just can't. She said, Ma, I can't do it, and I understand her. That day I met him and I was crying and, my son was wiping my tears and I said, to them, I said, if I had a choice, I would go to work, I'll go to work. I have somebody that watch you guys so I could move out. Because when you're in a shelter, it takes so much.
Well, part of
so
the...
So much from you.
Part of the argument that government gives is that they want to encourage people to go out and work, but then it sounds to me like it's making it more difficult for people to go and work.
I definitely think that's true. It's very hard to sort of hold down a normal job when you're moving around all the time and when you don't have a steady place to live. And part of the problem also right now in the shelter system is that a lot of low-wage jobs in New York don't actually pay enough to afford an apartment without some sort of rental subsidy.
My guests are Kim Velsey, senior editor at the New York Observer. She wrote an article for the last week's issue called The Return of Hooverville. And Anne Pierre is one of the people that she profiles in that article. There's a photo of you with Jordan and Tyler when you're in the shelter on Clarkson Street, and they're both smiling. But I wonder, have they changed over the time that they've been in the shelters? Are you seeing a change in them?
Well, Jordan, yes. Jordan, yes. But I keep telling him, I keep saying, son, you're 9 years old, you know, don't worry too much about, like, you know, what's going on. You know, I said, just worry about, like, you know, be nine. You know, because,
well,
you know.
Can he have friends there? Are there people to play with?
No. You're not allowed to go to other people apartment.
And then then there's school.
Yes.
So he can't go to his schoolmates, his classmates' apartments?
There's one of them that live in the building. No, he cannot.
Is this affecting his grades?
No. I keep, like, you know, after he finished school at like 2:20, 2:30, when he get home, he eat, and I told him, like, you know, we sit on the table. I say, like, you know, do your homework until it's time, like, you know, to go get Tyler, because we have to leave at 5 to go get Tyler from his school.
Mm-hmm. Do people at these schools know that your children are homeless?
Only few of them know. Only few of them know, like the guidance counselor. Because, like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, we, like, you know, with the time, and we used to live one of the first place, like, you know, they put us after 270 Clarkson. It was like hour on a bus, a little bit more than an hour on a 15. And when I told them, like, you know, it is so far from his school, they told me, I pat, like, you know, miss, you should be lucky, like, you know, you live in Brooklyn. You know, as long as you're in Brooklyn, you could, like, you know, always, like, you know, bring your kids to school.
But it took an hour.
Yes.
Each way.
Yes.
Kim, has the shelter population changed over the years?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, the fastest growing segment of the shelter population in the last decade under Bloomberg has been families. And many of them are families, you know, many of them are families who were working recently or had been working recently who weren't ever part of this population before. And I think that many of them, you know, people tend to think that homelessness will be obvious, but this, you know, homeless families often hide it very well. They disguise it. It's not something you'd know if you, you know, saw them on the street walking by, if you saw them on the train.
So in the past, it was mostly single people. Now 3/4 of the people in the shelters are families.
Yeah, it's really changed, and
what's led to that? I mean, you said that it's during the years of the Bloomberg administration. Have policies changed that have forced this on people, or is it just simply that we had this economic downturn?
Well, I mean, it's both factors. But before Bloomberg, with the other mayors, there was a policy to sort of give preference to homeless families for Section 8. And for public housing, and that preference was eliminated by Bloomberg.
Yes.
And he had a rental subsidy program called Advantage that was eliminated in 2011 because of a loss of funding. And after that, there's been really no sort of path for people to move out of the shelter system.
So he replaced the old system with Vantage.
Right.
With Advantage. And then Advantage stopped getting funding, so he didn't come up with a new system?
Right. So there's really no way for people to move out of the shelter system unless they can find an affordable arrangement by themselves, which for most families is not something that's possible.
My guests are Kim Velsey, senior editor at the New York Observer. Her article, The Return of Hooverville, was in the April 29th issue of that newspaper, and Ann Pierre, who's the subject of the article. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Ann Pierre, who lives in a homeless shelter with two of her three children. Kim Velsey, senior editor at New York Observer, who wrote an article about people like Ann in the April 29th issue of that newspaper. It's called The Return of Hooverville. Ann, have you been able to have a job while you've been in the shelter?
Right now, my case is sanctioned. Okay, let me explain it a little bit more to you. It's sanctioned. They told me they sent me a back to work program. When I used to live on 270 Clarkson, but I never received it because I keep moving. You know, 10 days here, 10 days there.
They move you. This is not your choice?
Well, no. You know, after, like, you know, you get denied, you have to go back to PAT, like, you know, to start the process, you know, all over again. And right now I'm sanctioned. I cannot. My oldest son, my youngest son, the reason he's still going to the daycare is I had to ask for a fair hearing. Because I explained to the lady, I said, like, you know, I need, like, you know, a paper so I could try to bring my oldest son to the daycare so I could go to work. She said, ma'am, I'm sorry, you got sanctioned. I said, since when? She said, you haven't received the letter? I said, like, you know, I've been moving, so I didn't get, like, you know, no letter.
Now, what is sanctioning, Kim?
Yeah, probably Anne is the best one to explain that.
Okay, they sanctioned me because they say, like, you know, they sent me a back-to-work program letter. I didn't go there, but I haven't received the letter. That's why I did not go.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get the letter. They're punishing now for not responding to a letter you didn't receive.
And they told me, like, you know, because of that, the food stamp will still stay the same, but, like, you know, my cash, you know, they will cut the cash on my part. I will not get no cash for me. I will only get it for the kids. And also, I'm sanctioned until, like, you know, September. I said, like, you know, I cannot be sanctioned up to September. I have to work before that. They said, I'm sorry. The only thing you could do is, like, you know, ask for a fair hearing. I asked for a fair hearing on the 15th of last month. And they told me it will take, like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to get, like, you know, the letter. Tell me, like, you know, when to go for my fair hearing.
So how do you survive? I mean, you have a bed. In what kind of condition? You and your children, are you in an open space with a lot of other people?
This place, like I said, is one of the best. Is to me, like, you know, this is the best place right now. Because when we went at Help One, we went on a Friday, and a Saturday I had to take my son to the emergency room. And again, I had to take him on Monday because, like, you know, it was very dusty. And they had, like, you know, roach and mice, which is, you know, trigger asthma.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Is it noisy?
No. This place is an amber. Like, it's clean. You know, it's clean. Like, we make sure, like, you know, before we, you know, sleep on the bed, like, you know, to spray the mattress, you know. But after that, you know, the place is clean. It's almost like an apartment, but it just, like, you know, well, it is an apartment, but it's just, like, you know, the walls, like, you know, you have curfew, you know.
When do you have to be in by?
10 o'clock.
And then they actually search your bag? Each time you come in?
Not each time, but, you know, they say, like, you know, they have to.
Why? What do they think you're smuggling in?
That's their policy. And they also said, like, you know, now, like, you know, they have to.
The security wand?
Yes.
It's like going through going to the airport every time? Or
right.
Into some government building?
Like, you know, it's for your own protection, you know.
Because they don't want you to have a knife or a gun.
Yes.
Now, can you keep many of your possessions with you? You had an apartment. You had to, I assume, leave a lot of stuff behind.
Yes.
Your pots and pans and dishes and all of those things?
No, not. I left my bed because I didn't have enough space for the storage at the time.
Oh, they do provide you with storage for some of your things.
Yes. But I left, like, you know, my bed, you know, the whole bedroom and, like, you know, and the kids' bed. You know, I took, like, you know, the living room and, you know, our TV. And, you know, right now, they have, you know, you're supposed to have a TV, like, you know, no bigger than 19. you know.
There's a reason for that?
That's the policy, you know. And, like, you know, right now, you know, we don't have a TV, you know. And my kids keep asking me, Ma, we need a TV. I say, I know we need a TV, but, like, right now, you know, we just cannot afford it. Like, with $140 every 2 weeks, you know. And I have to pay, I have to make sure, like, you know, I do the laundry. And, you know, my kids have to get their hair cut. We have to look clean on the street.
So you're getting $70 a week to survive on with two kids?
Yes.
How much, Kim, does... how expensive is it to house a family in a shelter?
The city basically says it costs around $3,000 a month. And that does include some, you know, additional services, social services. But that's generally much, much more expensive than... You know, the Section 8 voucher was $750, I think.
Is it profitable for the landlords to accept homeless families?
Yes, it's very profitable. In fact, some advocates that I spoke with, homeless advocates, told me that there are some problems in buildings where landlords see that if they can sort of get a contract with the city to have a shelter, they can make a lot more per apartment than, you know, almost twice what they're making now. Sort of renting to low-income families.
And why is it that people who rent apartments object to having a four-year-old? That was a problem that you faced,
yes.
Anne, wasn't it, when you were looking for Section 8 housing?
Yes, yes.
What's wrong with a four-year-old?
They told me, like, one of the landlord, I remember it was on Flatbush, he told me, ma'am, I'm going to tell you this straight. You see, like, the heater... With a four-year-old, like, you know, we have to cover it. And the window, we have to make sure there's a guard. It cannot be no higher than the guard because, like, you know, this is what Section 8 want. So they could pass inspection. Everything, like, you know, we have to make sure, like, you know, everything is fixed before it passes inspection with the small kids.
So, Kim, somebody with a child four and under or under is going to have real problems finding housing. Housing?
Well, technically, it's illegal for a landlord to actually deny somebody housing because of the age of their children. But I think, as Anne found out, you know, there are a lot of practices that happen in the New York rental market that are not legal that really make it difficult to find apartments.
Yeah. We could have been living in our apartment, you know, right now. But this is like, you know, that they told me, like, you know, ma'am, I'm sorry, but, you know, that's how it is, you know. This is, you know, this is our apartment, you know. And I said, I understand. You know, trying to talk to them, say, like, you know,
it doesn't
cost that much
to put up a window guard, by the way.
No, but, like, they told me, like, you know, when you have, like, smaller kids like that, they want to make sure, like, you know, everything is the way they're supposed to.
My guests are Anne Pierre and Kim Velsey. We're talking about the current situation where there are 50,000 people now who are homeless in the city, three-quarters of them families. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And how long did you think that you'd be in a shelter when this whole thing began?
I told my son, I said maybe 6 months.
How long has it been?
Almost a year.
Uh-huh. And you don't see an end to it?
No, because right now, since I lost my Section 8, because I trying to, like, ask for my transfer again, they told me, like, they can't. They told me to send a letter to Long Island City, and I did. They told me they denied me, but I didn't get no letter. The reason I found out, like, you know, I was denied, it was because of the housing specialist. She told me, she called them. They say, like, you know, I deny. And I even bring the paper to Section 8 asking for the transfer again. They told me, like, you know, sorry, like, it was a one-time deal. You know, they cannot help me.
Now, Kim, didn't Mayor Bloomberg say in 2004 that he would reduce the homeless population by two-thirds?
He did. He had, you know, fairly ambitious, very ambitious plans to reduce homelessness in the city.
So when you spoke to people at City Hall about in preparing for that article, what did they tell you?
Basically, you know, over the last few years when the homeless population has really spiked sharply, it's been the position of the Bloomberg administration that it's you know, sort of brought on both by the recession and by the end of Advantage. And the Department of Homeless Services says that it, you know, basically Advantage was working is what they claim.
That was paid for by the state?
It was paid for by the state and the city. And state funding got cut, and then the program was canceled. So they really point it at the end of that program as something that really brought on this crisis. However, a lot of other advocates say that the program had a high level of recidivism because it was time limited. So the vouchers would only be good for 2 years, and then people would fall back into the system because they weren't making enough.
But it also sounds to me like we're spending money here because we're not spending money there.
Right. That's definitely true. It's a very expensive solution, and it's one that no one's really happy with. In some ways, you know, homeless shelters for families have become a sort of de facto affordable housing, which isn't good for anyone. It's certainly not good for the city financially. It's not good for the families living in them.
How long do families typically stay in these shelters? It's supposed to be a short-term situation.
I think the most recent statistic I had read was for the first time since the late 1980s, families stayed on average a little bit more than a year.
Now, Anne, what about food? Does the shelter provide you with food?
No. You get food stamp. You know, with whatever, like, you know, they make a budget, how many families you have, like, you know, they give you the food stamp so you could, you know, make sure, like, you know, you buy food, you know, for the kids and yourself.
Well, $70 a week.
That's for cash. But food stamp, like, you know, we get like $285 mm-hmm. a month.
We have a caller who's also been in the system, JR. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Lennon. And let me say, I always enjoy your show. Your shows are informative and quiet, you know.
Well, let's talk about, we don't have a lot of time, JR, but you were in the system during the Giuliani years?
Yes, I was.
And have you been in it during the Bloomberg years as well?
Yeah, I was in a part of the Bloomberg years, too.
And how much has it changed?
Well, when I was in it, it changed not at all. I mean, when you come in to register, you know, I was in and out of the system because, you know, you get tired of living with maybe a friend or relative. You come in, they want to know the same information. You figure they have this information of you logged in to see whether any change. No, they go through all this. Okay, when you come into your system, you got to wait for a bit. You got to be in there by 11 o'clock. Of course, this is a single male. I'm a single male now, single male system. You have to wait for a bed. You get a bed at 11 o'clock. I worked all the time I was in the system. It makes no difference whether you work or not. You're still seeing the same. They make no provision if you're working. You come in, you register. You got to be scanned by the Department of Homeless Shelter Police. They have a machine there, and then they also wand you. The food is subpar. Some shelters, I know I've seen shootings, I've seen stabbings and fights, and but the main thing insofar as getting out, you figure if you work, they fast track you.
What happened with you? How did you finally get an apartment?
As I told your screener, one of the caseworkers that happened to know a broker who happened to be working here in New York, New Jersey, in Philadelphia. And he knew a friend, and that's the only way I got an apartment.
So it's really luck in some cases. Kim, do you hear similar stories? Oh, you didn't hear? Okay. Anyway, I'm just one more thing, Anne, before you go. You want to you've worked in nursing?
I do the home health aid. I still have my certificate. I know there's places that are hiring.
Yeah, because there's a nursing shortage, isn't there?
You know, but the problem right now, since I'm sanctioned, I don't have nobody to, like, you know, watch my other son for me.
Mm-hmm. And he can't stay at a friend's house, as you said.
No.
So you're kind of caught in the bind there.
No, he cannot stay, and he cannot stay by himself. If he stay by himself, like, you know, they will call.
If you had the money, do you have time to search for an apartment?
Yes.
And are you looking?
Right now, I'm not looking for any apartment because I don't have anything, you know. But the only thing I'm just praying in, so we could, I'm praying, like, you know, to get my section leave so I could, like, you know, go to work. And they told me, like, you know, plain and simple, the only way out is, like, you know, to work and save money.
But you can't work.
You know, right now I cannot work because I'm sanctioned and I cannot leave my kids by themselves.
Kim, did you find other people in similar situations?
Yes. I mean, I would say, you know, this is a fairly sort of common problem where you have, you know, once one thing goes wrong, everything depends on something else that you can't sort of make it work again. But I think also what's sort of interesting in Anne's case is even if she was working, the Section 8 voucher was very much essential to her being able to afford that $1,100 a month rent. So even saving money and working now, it's, I'm sure, it'd be very hard for her to actually pay for the sorts of rents that are in the city.
Because New York is expensive.
New York is very expensive, right.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Kim Velsey is a senior editor at the New York Observer. Her article, The Return of Hooverville, was in the April 29th issue, and Anne Pierre was the subject of that article.